Welcome to J. Chang Piano Studio presents The Studio Podcast, where we will recap the week's events at the studio and or talk about things that have been in the air in music over the past week. This week's music term of the week is accordion. And the Harvard Concise Dictionary of Music defines accordion as a portable musical instrument consisting of two rectangular headboards connected by a folding bellows. Inside the headboards are metal tongues that act as free-beating reeds. The instrument has pushed out and drawn in reeds, the former sounding when the headboards are moved outward, the latter when they are moved inward. The modern accordion has a keyboard on the right side for playing melody notes, while buttons on the left side operate bass notes and full chords. The earliest instruments of this type were made by Bushman in 1822, Buffett in 1827, and Damien in 1829. A similar instrument preferred in England is the concertina, invented by Wheatstone in 1829. It is hexagonal in shape and has a number of buttons on each side. The bandoneon is a related square instrument invented by Band in the 1840s and still popular in Argentina. So that was accordion, our music term for the week. And I thought it would be nice to listen to some accordion music to go with our music term this week. So I found a YouTube video titled Extreme Accordion Skills, posted by Arnim Antiques, featuring an accordionist who is only referred to as Hrustovich, and who is performing the Presto from Summer by Vivaldi. Hrustovich performing Presto from Summer by Vivaldi on accordion. Thanks to Arnim Antiques for sharing that with us on YouTube. This week's Pianos on Craigslist is a free piano. It is an old vintage upright piano with an oak finish cabinet, and you can pick it up in Sylmar. The brand is Hudson of New York, and I like this text from the Post. It says that it still plays fine, but I don't. So it is a full-size keyboard. It has the three pedals and one of the tall uprights, 56 inches tall, which is always preferable if you can get a taller upright. That is always a good deal. And for free, you can't really get a better deal than that. So let's see if we can get this poor old vintage upright piano a new loving home. Look for the link in this week's episode description. This week at the studio, I learned something from one of my students that was really neat. So, one of my students is working on the memory of one of his pieces, and so we were running his piece from memory. Without the score on the music rack, because sometimes I allow the score on the music rack to kind of as a stepping stone towards memorization, but he had already given a performance with the score on the music rack, and so we were removing that crutch, and he was trying it completely from memory without being able to glance up at the score. And there was this one section that never was really a problem before, but suddenly at the lesson was creating issues for him because he needed to fine-tune some of his memorization of especially the left-hand part. And in the lesson we were discussing this. It's a common issue with pianists because most people tend to be right-handed. And so we favor our right hand, we focus on our right hand, and kind of let our left hand go a little bit. And it can show up sometimes in our memory of pieces. So this was a case where this happened, and I implored that he take some time for these few measures to just go back and review the left hand a little bit. It wasn't a very serious issue, he just needed to go back and kind of look at the left hand again to make sure that he knew what was going on. One of the things that my student observed to me, though, was he said when he's memorizing, he tends to look at his left hand for some reason. So when he's playing music from memory, instead of looking at his right hand, he tends to look at his left hand, and it was this instance of looking at his left hand that kind of triggered, this moment where he needed to just kind of fine-tune his memory of this one section. Interestingly, though, my student also mentioned that he says when he does his scales, he even also tends to look at his left hand. And this was something that really kind of clicked for me, because his scales are very, very clean. His left hand and right hand play perfectly in sync. For me personally, I tend to struggle with that. And I was thinking about what hand do I look at when I'm playing my scales, and I realized, you know what, it's because I'm looking at my right hand. My student mentioned that he looks at his left hand because he feels that his left hand is weaker, so he needs to really concentrate and pay attention to the fingering and that kind of thing. For me, because both my hands knew the scale fingerings very well, I don't know why, I think because maybe I'm right-handed, I would just look at my right hand. So this is an interesting practice and playing technique that I'm going to try to employ for myself to see if I can rectify my issue with my own scales, which is where my right hand is very, very fluid, and because I'm right-handed and because I guess I'm looking at my right hand when I play my scales, my right-hand scales are very strong, left-hand scales weaker. So when I try to play them together, they don't sound good. One hand is stronger and you can clearly tell the other hand is a little bit lagging or not quite together and with it. So this was a really cool thing. I mean, I learned stuff from my students too. And I like that I'm just so proud of this particular student. He is one of my graduating high school seniors, which is very special, actually. It's very rare and unusual for a student to continue piano from a very young age all the way through to even the 12th grade of high school. And so this is one of my students who is doing that. And
he's gotten to the point where he is thinking pedagogically. I like to think that it's because I encourage that way of thinking. We talk about process a lot in lessons with me. We will be talking about process a lot because I'm a pedagogy person. I'm very interested in process. and so my student was thinking through his own process, and he was observing in himself, saying, hey, you know what? I'm looking at my left hand when I'm playing from memory, and even looking at my left hand when I'm doing my scales. And that's a really cool thing, to have this ability to self-assess and be self-aware and to figure out what issues are and how to solve these problems. So that was definitely a very cool thing that I learned from one of my students this week at the studio. Coming up later this month will be the release of a documentary on Samuel Barber. The director is H. Paul Moon, and he has filmed a full-length documentary about the American composer Samuel Barber. Here is the trailer featuring commentary by William Schumann, Thomas Hampson, a brief reading from the Barber biography by Barbara Heyman, Leonard Slatkin, and Leonard Bernstein.
The history of the arts is filled with examples of those who expanded the means of expression. There have, however, been other artists who are content to create within established means. In music, for example, such composers would include Bach, Mozart, Mendelssohn, and Brahms. Samuel Barber is in this tradition. Barber's work is widely recognized and accepted as having enriched the literature of virtually every facet of musical expression. Each piece that he has created is characterized by deeply felt emotions couched in the sophisticated terms of a master craftsman. If one were to choose a single word best to describe his art, the choice would have to be impeccable.
It's not my point to rate composers. I can't imagine 20th century American music without Samuel Barber. I don't think you can talk about the height of creative ability in this country without referencing Samuel Barber. To me, he's just one of those orienting composers. If you're going to study American music, you're going to study Samuel Barber and his music.
There is so much to music. It is building up an influence which no one can measure. To me, all great music is a protest, a revolution, against all the artificiality which surrounds it. When greatness bursts its fetters, then the world sees something. It may look like a cataclysm, but it may be a destruction of a hypocrisy which binds creativeness and stifles the honest voice.
Music is meant to convey emotion. It can be happy, can be sarcastic, can be melancholy. I'm not sure that most composers set out to convey those emotions when they put pen to paper. I think what they're looking for is contrast. Barber's works that are slow and have moments of serene calm and repose do so in a way that just touches the heart.
I loved the music of his that I knew. I've always associated Sam's music with Plato in my mind. I think he is a Platonic composer in the sense that I feel that all his music has been written in terms of what Plato called the absolute, with a faith in the concept that there is an absolute truth and an absolute beauty and an absolute rightness of things. Seems to be that all Sam's music has tried to do that, has tried to form one version or another of absolute beauty.
And that was the trailer for the new documentary on Samuel Barber called Absolute Beauty, filmmaker H. Paul Moon.
The film will be released on March 23rd. You can rent it online or download and stream it anytime. Just go to samuelbarberfilm.com. And that was The Week at the Studio. My name is Josephine Chang. Thank you for listening.